How does pandemic preparation make economic sense? Joining us now on the KSRO Live Line is Jennifer Prah-Ruger, professor of health equity, economics, and policy, as well as the founder and director of the Health Equity and Policy Lab at the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for joining us, professor.
Thank you.
Now, the president has stated a few weeks ago that the economic impacts of coronavirus were worse than the cure. Is this an either or situation?
Well, I don't believe it is an either or situation. I believe that preparing for pandemics is an economic choice that has high returns, and there is evidence to suggest that that's the case. The World Bank has done a series of analysis estimating the cost that it would take to invest in the systems to prevent a pandemic from occurring. Now, pandemic, of course, is across multiple countries, as well as the returns that would accrue as a result of those investments. And the cost-benefit analysis suggests that the returns are quite high. There isn't a trade-off if we think ahead in terms of investments for economic and health returns.
Now, this seems like we're in an unprecedented situation right now. Is there a way to effectively prepare to have sort of resilience when we're in a pandemic? And what kinds of steps do we need to take?
Yes. Yeah, so the analysis that I was referring to in my op-ed was to prevent the occurrence of the pandemic altogether. But now that we're in the midst of it, we do know that the current science is suggesting that the virus could become endemic to our population, which means it's going to be around in our population. So we need to take measures to prevent the further health effects in terms of morbidity as well as death. While we're in the midst of this. And what we can do is try to take stock of the information that we have with respect to the basic public health approach, which is we need to improve our testing abilities, we need to identify cases, we need to then isolate people and quarantine and use those earlier measures to prevent the spread of the virus throughout the population so that vulnerable populations, which we've now learned, are people with underlying conditions, older people, and now we see that there are racial and ethnic differences, are protected from this virus.
Now, what about messaging and communicating with the public? How important is that element of the pandemic response and also preparation?
Risk communication is very important to the response, both in advance and between crises, as well as during a crisis. The reason is that risk communication informs the public of what they need to do. It improves the trust in the government and other actors who are working to manage the epidemic, and it improves effectiveness in people's behavior. So the communication needs to be factually based. It needs to be honest and truthful. It needs to be communicated in a way that people can understand. It needs to have specific applications to people's lives in terms of what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Now, what about the centralized government response? Here in the United States, it seems it's really been up to each individual state to decide what their response is, and even for our states to find their own equipment and things that they need to respond. How important is it to have a centralized sort of way of doing things in a government?
Again, the research that we have on pandemics and what we've learned, and by the way, there we have had a great deal of experience with this. Between 2011 and 2018, the World Health Organization tracked that there's been over 1,400 epidemic events in 172 countries. So we have a great deal of evidence that suggests that centralized approaches to handling epidemics which occur within countries and pandemics which occur across countries is an effective approach. This is because the whole of society approach where A country and a national government needs to work across the different sectors of the economy and at different levels, working with local authorities and in the United States, the state authorities, to centralize an approach and coordinate is the most effective. That's what the evidence suggests. And the reason is because that's the way that we can get the resources to the places that need the resources most and make sure, for example, we're protecting our health workers and those on the front lines.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, when we look at the cost of preparation versus how much benefit it could be, how much does it cost to be prepared in these cases?
Well, the estimates, and they're actually several years old, so these may be underestimates. The estimates, both on the cost side and the benefit side, the estimates that have been put forward are that it's about a little more than $3 billion a year. And that's taking a whole of society approach, as I just said, across the entire set of sectors that relate to pandemics and risk management, as well as taking a One Health approach. And that approach is focused on the intersection of our veterinary authorities and managing wildlife and domesticated animals, as well as our public health authorities. Mm. And to bring all countries up to international standards, and there are standards that have been set by the international community, will cost about a little over $3 billion a year. That's annually. Whereas the benefits over $30 billion a year, about $37 billion a year. So the cost-benefit is highly favorable to investing in these kinds of preparative measures, even in the case of a very low-risk event. And the reason is because we can calculate the expected value of a low-risk event that still has very severe and significant catastrophic outcomes, as of course we're seeing currently with the COVID-19 pandemic.
We appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is Professor Jennifer Pratt-Ruger telling us about sort of the cost and the benefit being prepared for a pandemic such as the one we're in right now.